You are listening to the Huddle Up Podcast, part of the USA Today Podcast Network. I'm your host, Corey Bonini, and we're here to talk fantasy football for the 2018 NFL season. Once again, Ryan Bonini joins me. This time we're talking week four. We have 3 games worth of data down. Ryan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I've got a couple 3-0 teams, and I've got an 0-3 team, Corey. How are you looking?
Not too bad overall. I have a couple teams who have taken some bad beats, but that's part of fantasy, of course. So no complaints overall. I thought week three was really interesting, Ryan. There were several upsets. And if you're the type of person who does your fantasy evaluation based on expectations of game flow, you know, maybe you look at a lineup and say, I'm going to play this guy in my flex spot because he is going against a team that's typically poor against the run. They may be in a matchup where they're going to get beaten up. Latavius Murray comes to mind, right? Last week, everybody expected Minnesota should steamroll Buffalo. Didn't quite work that way. Game got out of hand in favor of Buffalo, meaning Murray basically is useless from a fantasy perspective because they're going to pass all the time. He's not going to be involved in that side of the game. When you're looking at lineups, do you have any type of way of maybe balancing those two things? I mean, obviously, everybody who's in this game has expectations of how a game will play out. Sometimes, look, we're always going to be flat wrong on that. I mean, that I don't care how long you do this, how well you are at doing it. Sometimes things come out of nowhere, right?
Well,
do you get too worked up in that? Do you let that carry over from week to week and say, wow, I was so wrong on this team last week, and then maybe approach that team differently the next week? Or do you treat that maybe as a, you know, just a blip on the radar?
Latavius Murray, I'm worked up, Corey. Really worked up.
Yeah, I know. Seriously, I probably picked like the worst guy to start with, but it was on my brain.
And if that's me worked up, I'm in trouble. But seriously, you played Latavius Murray last week because Dalvin Cook wasn't playing. Yes, Minnesota put up an egg, but that's, as they say, why they play the game. There's always going to be situations like that where a player who is not a three-down back gets knocked out of the equation because of the game flow. To go in and say, well, you know, I anticipate the game to go this way or that way, you're generally talking about fringe players in a situation like that. And then, to me at least, it comes down to how you constructed your roster entering the season. Personally, I try to avoid players who are game flow dependent. A guy like LeGarrette Blount traditionally has been totally game flow dependent. He's either going to get a short touchdown run or he's going to close out a game and get 60% of his yards in the fourth quarter. Those aren't guys you traditionally win with. But bye weeks are here. Stuff happens. Sometimes you have to change your strategy on the fly. I prefer the guys that are on the field the majority of the time, regardless of the situation. Can't always get those guys. So then you start digging a little bit deeper. That's where stats, trends, flow of game all start to play into the factor. And sometimes, as you noted, you're just as wrong as wrong can be. You know, you can't hit them all, and you just have to put yourself in a situation roster wise to not put yourself as dependent on those players who aren't that big of a key in the system.
Well, Murray was on my mind more or less. Okay, last week, obviously, we didn't have any bye weeks. This week we do. Going forward, we have bye weeks to worry about. Luckily, only 2 this week, so it's not quite as hard to find a lineup that's suitable, that can give you, you know, an optimal point production. But when you start getting into those 4 and even 16 buys, you start looking at players that you normally wouldn't consider in your lineup. And maybe I'm just trying to get a little ahead of the game for some owners, give them some perspective on how they should approach it. It's really easy for an owner to simply say, who would you start? But I think everybody benefits when they have a better understanding of how somebody who does this professionally looks at a lineup, looks at constructing a starting lineup, and views situations a little more nuanced than the casual fan would. I think it's something at least to keep in mind that game flow has such a huge factor that if you're slightly off on the game flow, or in like the case of that Buffalo-Minnesota game, wildly off, it can have a pretty strong impact on fantasy outcomes and lineups. But something more important, let's look at some headlines, some news from the last week or so. Talk about a few players that are going to be on the radar, or maybe at least try to force their way onto the radar. Baker Mayfield's probably the biggest name. I don't know that anybody's necessarily going to go out, pick him up, start him, and trust him in a fantasy lineup. My concern is, what type of immediate impact does he make on the fantasy value of the backfield, on the wide receivers, the tight end? Is he a guy that you would then add maybe in a 2QB league, or would you play in a super flex league? Or are we talking, hey, look, he had a good showing off the bench, but he is ultimately a rookie, pump the brakes?
So last week in relief, he looked pretty good. He's got a moxie to him. He elevates the players around him. Unlike Tyrod Taylor, Mayfield can hit the broadside of a barn more often than not. So the accuracy is going to be better. You're going to see a better distribution of the football. You're going to see some bigger plays. You're going to see more sustained drives. All of that makes guys like Landry, Njoku, Hyde more valuable. Now it starts to bring a guy like Callaway into more of a conversation as a flex play, especially with bye weeks here. In regards to Mayfield, not as much direct fantasy value on him per se, but again, with the bye weeks here, desperate times call for desperate measures. If you're in a super flex, two quarterback league, he's going to be in the equation in the coming weeks. There are going to be growing pains. There are going to be turnovers. But this guy looks like, all things considered, because he does have a fairly talented team around him in terms of skill position players, and that defense seems like it's getting better and better each week. This is a guy that could go for 250 and 1 to 2 touchdowns every week with an interception to go along with it. So if you're scraping the bottom of the barrel, he's in the upper echelon of that group.
I can't really argue with any of that. I'm interested to see how his role, or relationship rather, develops with Callaway. Callaway stretches the field better than anyone else in that offense. But let's, you know, be honest here. He didn't even play college football last year. He's very raw. He's had some off-the-field concerns. Maturity has been a question mark for him. Saw 5 targets from both Mayfield and Taylor last week. Kind of interested to see if they get the ball in his hands on design plays that take advantage of his athleticism. They tried that a little bit last week. It'd be really interesting. I think he's somebody that if you have on your team, maybe you're looking at him more as a matchup guy. But if he's not on your team, there's an interesting opportunity there to me as a buy low potential guy that you could trade almost nothing for and possibly get something of value with a season-long look in mind. So moving on, an injury situation that devastated a lot of preseason plans. I don't think it was quite shaping up the way a lot of people intended it to through 3 games, but Jimmy Garoppolo was a sleeper darling, a breakout darling for a lot of fantasy prognosticators going back to the draft, fantasy draft season. Fast forwarding to today, obviously no longer the case. The ACL tear takes him out. I'm more concerned, what does that do for Matt Breida, Alfred Morris, Pierre Garçon, Marquise Goodwin, and even Kittle there at tight end? No, nobody's going to play C.J. Beathard as the quarterback replacement. I'm not even sure the 49ers want to be playing C.J. Beathard as the quarterback replacement. Are you punting now on all of those guys? Are you drastically downgrading them? To me, the only guy out of that group I really want anything to do with is Breida, because I still trust that offensive line, and he can do some damage in the short passing game. Beathard probably isn't going to be much of one for going through his progression. It's probably going to be, let's get the ball out of his hands as quickly as possible, and that to me favors
Breida. I'm with you on Breida. I'm devaluing the entire team significantly here. Garçon, I don't want to have anything to do with. Goodwin, maybe low-end flex play, and that's a big maybe. I think Kittle stays pretty consistent. Big tight end, good check-down option, should continue to see a fair share of looks. Does that translate into much scoring-wise? Probably not, outside of just consistent PPR points. But this team is set back. And it's not just set back this year, it's set back long-term. Don't forget, Garoppolo only had a handful of starts under his belt entering the year. Now, San Francisco looked like they were turning the corner. Next year, they're going to be almost right back where they started with this quarterback who's been paid a lot of money to take them to the next level. Yet, he's still working his way through his own growing pain. So hopefully he comes back better than ever next year. But this sets the entire 49ers team back almost an entire year.
The same type of concept applies to Arizona. Sam Bradford was awful in the second half. Sam Bradford gave away the game in the second half. They pulled him, replaced him with Josh Rosen. He was obviously facing uphill battle at that point. With a week of preparation, do you expect to see at least a competent quarterback? And I'm more concerned, again, I don't think he's a guy that you're probably itching to get on your roster, but is he a guy that drastically devalues Fitzgerald? I don't know if really you could say Kirk, because he probably hasn't been highly valued yet. He had a pretty good game in week 3. The tight end Ricky Seals-Jones was an intriguing player, but David Johnson's obviously the name to be concerned with.
Whew. It almost feels like you need to punt on this entire situation. Completely. I wasn't a big Bradford fan. I'm an even less of a Rosen fan. Again, rookie quarterback, there's going to be struggles. But these struggles go further than the quarterback position right now, too. You've got a situation where the play calling has just been horrible. I don't know that that's going to change. Maybe they try and dumb it down a little bit for Rosen. But what's that do for the rest of the team? It doesn't help any. If I'm a Fitzgerald owner, I'm terrified right now. David Johnson, terrified. Until the offense goes back and tries to run through Johnson as the centerpiece, this team is going nowhere and going nowhere fast.
No arguments from me on that one. Rishard Matthews was Marcus Mariota's BFF the last couple of seasons. He had a knee injury that kept him out most of the offseason. Mariota himself is dealing with the elbow injury, isn't able to properly grip a football, can't make all of the throws he needs to. The entire offense is struggling right now. There's no question about it. Matthews wanted a trade. They said, we'll give you one better. You pick your own team. You're released. So he's no longer in the Tennessee organization. Where would you think makes us, you know, some sense for a landing spot, and is he worth stashing?
Like real estate, location, location, location. That's what matters the most here. But even then, what are you looking at? A wide receiver 3 in a best case scenario? We're entering week 4. He has to learn it. First, he has to find a new team. Then he has to learn a new system, build a rapport with his quarterback, work his way up the depth chart. And for the most part, he's just a guy. I'm not going to sit on somebody like that for the next 3 to 4 weeks with the hope that maybe he turns into a flex play for me. Possible landing spots, maybe a return to Miami, but he's not that much different than the receivers they already have on roster. Buffalo could use help. Dallas could use help. Washington, possibly. Carolina, maybe even Arizona, who we just spoke about. But again, I wouldn't waste my time here, and I don't think you should either.
Buffalo is an interesting spot to me. They don't have a lot to work with at receiver. Matthews knows the system fairly well. He has a connection there with Terry Robiskie, who was the offensive coordinator last year for Tennessee. He's now the wide receivers coach in Buffalo. Maybe a chance for something to happen. I wouldn't get overly excited, as you alluded to there. He's not somebody you're clamoring to get on your team. But if you're desperate, there's at least some reason to entertain the idea that he could be worth rostering. One running back I'm really intrigued by, he looked wonderful in week 3, is Detroit's Kerryon Johnson. He looked so explosive. He went over 100 yards, the first Lions back to do that since Reggie Bush in 2013. They got that out of the way. So is there more to come? Will Detroit commit to him? We talked about that recently, that they just don't like to pass run. Jim Bob Cooter is far more comfortable throwing the football as an offensive coordinator. Is there any reason to believe Detroit now will use that as motivation to emphasize the run, get him more involved after the sustained success that we saw?
This feels like such a tease. I think it was totally blueprinted around New England with Patricia knowing that team so well, ways he could hurt them. Obviously, the injuries that New England has had didn't help matters at all. But to see Johnson be in that conversation where he's getting close to 20 touches week in and week out seems like a pipe dream. He needs more snaps. He needs more touches, more balance, and force defenses to play honest. But as you noted, Jim Bob Cooter doesn't generally like to play his offense that way. They still have Theo Riddick, who's going to come in a lot on third downs. LeGarrette Blount's still going to be there to take some carries away in short yardage and possible goal line carries. Last week feels more like blueprint and game flow orientation than all of a sudden Detroit's going to be magically a running game because they finally have the talent that can run the football and run it quite well.
Well, let's be clear. I don't believe for a second Detroit is going to all of a sudden do like what we saw from New Orleans last year, where they go, we're a pass team. We're a pass team for however many years under Sean Payton, to all of a sudden, guess what? We're a power running team, and completely dominate that way. I mean, there's no way that's going to happen in Detroit. I still think they can be a little more balanced than we've seen. And in recent years, we've seen as much as like a 70-30 split or more. So that in mind, I'm thinking maybe you get some RB2 weeks out of Johnson. Most likely he's an inconsistent flex back, but Detroit would be kind of foolish that as long as they're in the game to not continually feed him. I think LeGarrette Blount has to take a back seat.
Make him inactive.
There you go. I don't know if I'd go in that. Maybe. Maybe. He's still a hammer on the goal line. He's still a big, big dude to take down.
Give it to Johnson.
Fine by me. Okay, so we heard all offseason long, Jordy Nelson looked young, looked like he was a 30-year-old guy, even though he's 33, that he still had the wheels. And then the first two games come and go, and we're like, what was that all about? We haven't seen anything. They were giving him these shallow routes. They weren't getting the ball into his hands in an effective way. All of that changed last week. The average depth of target drastically increased. They were putting him down the field and letting him do what he does best, and that's track the ball down the field and create separation in the open field. And it worked, and he had a wonderful game. Is that a sign of things to come? I personally am a little hesitant to be overly excited.
Look, I've got a lot of Jordy Nelson this year. On my bench everywhere last week, of course.
Same here.
This week, I'm inclined to let him sit again. It might bite me, but I want to see more of that before I'm willing to commit. 150 plus yards a game is going to be an outlier. But the reality here is Amari Cooper still doesn't look right. For everything John Gruden said about making him the centerpiece of the offense in the passing game, it's not working. I believe you're going to see Nelson very quickly emerge as the number one wide receiver there, much like Michael Crabtree had quietly done in recent years. Jordy's going to have every chance to continue to establish himself as that. But, I need more proof in the pudding before I think I'm going to slide him in, because I just can't handle another 6-7 point game out of him if they go right back to where they were. Was last week blueprint against the defense, or was it a evolution of the offense as they continue to grow under Gruden? I'm hoping the latter, but we'll find out soon.
Do you put any weight into the Martavis Bryant factor of being a home run hitter and being able to stretch a defense so they have to pay a little more attention to him, and that freed up Jordy Nelson at times?
Oh, you have to give them that, but how much longer is Bryant going to be there? We just don't know that answer yet. I guess you take it week by week, but anytime you've got a guy like Bryant who can take the top off of a defense, it's going to give Jordy way more opportunities in the deep intermediate parts of the field to work his magic like he did so well in Green Bay for so many years.
Looking over the next several weeks, the Rams lost both of their starting cornerbacks. They're among the lowest teams in the league in creating pressure entering Thursday night. 4 sacks in 3 games. Are you expecting a lack of pass rush to expose this replacement secondary? Do you think that there's any reason that we should now start taking receivers who were otherwise fringe considerations, or even guys that you would look at that matchup and say, I don't want anything to do with them, and now vaulting them into the conversation of, I have to play this guy?
It's a twofold thing in my brain right now. One, strike while the iron's hot, while the injuries are there, while there's lack of chemistry in the secondary, go after it. The other piece is that Rams offense has become so damn good, it's putting opponents in a situation where they're having to play a lot of catch up early, often, in garbage time points, garbage time yards, things that the Rams defense hasn't been giving up that much in the past because they were in tighter games. It almost feels like the game flow is just letting them play a little bit looser, which is giving up more yards, more chunk plays, all of the above. And I think you're going to see that continue. Now, this isn't a situation of, oh, here's a very average wide receiver two on an opposing team. We have to get him in the lineup against the Rams. That's not the case. And I do think that this defense is going to find ways to get pressure on the quarterback relatively soon to make up for some of their deficiencies in the secondary. But the reality is here, this Rams defense, for all the talent they have, it's going to take a little bit of time, especially now due to the injuries, for all of that to gel into one of these shutdown type defenses. I'm going to play the guys I typically would play against a better than average defense and not think twice.
Okay, and I'm on board with that too. And regardless of how they look Thursday night, I think it's very fair to say that Minnesota's passing game is enough to exploit most reasonable cornerbacks. I'm thinking more of, you know, you're going to play Diggs, you're going to play Thielen in any other environment, right? In any situation like that, in your lineup. So I'm completely scratching that and pretending Thursday night isn't even in the equation. I'm thinking more over the next month or so. They're going to be without Talib for up to 8 weeks, and we really don't know about Peters. That matters. I mean, that does matter, especially not having the ability to generate a pass rush. Being able to pressure a quarterback can make an average secondary look way better than it really is. So I think it's at least something to focus on. Don't automatically see the Rams secondary and be afraid. And if you're also looking, like, you set your lineup depending on the league scoring, the league platform you use, the host of your league, most of them tend to have the matchup against numbers. Oftentimes those are drawn out over the whole course of a season, so you have several games in there that become statistically aberrations by the time you get later in the year. I think that's something really important to focus on if you're a casual player. If you look at that number, you'll end up seeing for the next couple of weeks the Rams will be up there. Don't be so worried about that. I'd be really comfortable playing most guys that are normally in that wide receiver 3 to flex conversation against this, all things considered. We touched earlier a little bit on the Rishard Matthews connection with Marcus Mariota. We didn't really get into Mariota himself. At this point, is he ever going to be a fantasy thing? He's hurt all the time. Nobody seems to know how to use him properly. New coordinators come and go, and nobody can seem to find a way to get this guy going as being a highly touted player. I don't even know that he's worth stashing at this point. I think you'd have to be so desperate to keep him on your roster, especially with the way some of these less heralded quarterbacks have played. I mean, I'm seeing him on the waiver wire in a lot of leagues right now and perfectly comfortable leaving him. Do you see it differently? And The bigger concern to me is how this impacts Corey Davis. He was somebody a lot of owners were drafting, I thought maybe higher than necessary, fifth, sixth round range coming into the year. I thought that was aggressive. He looked good down the stretch last year, just not entirely sold on the system, not entirely sold on the passing game at all. And the quarterback himself is front and center of being the problem to me. Would you look at that in any other way?
Drafted him aggressively. Drafted him ridiculously. Mariota as well. This is a guy that I took off my draft board a number of times over the last year, 2 years. He's just too fragile all the time. He'll go out there, he'll put together a couple of really nice games, like top three, type four quarterback numbers that week, and then he just disappears, gone for a couple weeks, streaky, erratic, no consistency. You look at the passing game beyond that, and especially Delanie Walker out for the season, there's not a lot to work with there. Davis was just in his second year. He's shown a few flashes, but he too has yet to put it together. Is that on him or is that on Mariota? The jury's still out there. But not being a believer, let him stay on the waiver wire. Drop him. I was telling people that I knew that were having me evaluate their teams after draft season that had Mariota's number two, and said, hey, there's guys like Derek Carr still on your waiver wire. Drop Mariota and go after Carr. I had very, very little expectations for him this year. So as far as Davis goes, low-end flex play maybe, especially with bye weeks here.
I'm also concerned about the running game there. The boxes are being stacked with eight-man fronts all the time, and they have to worry about, or they don't have to worry about Mariota beating them. That's awful for Derrick Henry, and it's awful for Deion Lewis. I'm going to give them another couple of weeks before I completely write off the running backs, but I think they're going down with the ship, and it may not even be their fault. One other situation here that's interesting to me, we'll look at some matchups that we talked last week. You get a few games under your belt, you start seeing some trends. A few of these matchups stand out to me that I'm not sure I want to commit to them being authentic, and I'd like your take. So I guess we'll call this a little round of fact or fiction here. The Arizona Cardinals are really bad. They're currently the second worst PPR team, giving up 36.9 points a game to the running back position. Is that who they are, or do you attribute most of that to having faced Todd Gurley and his three touchdowns against?
Well, obviously, Gurley's numbers don't help matters. I think they wish the Honey Badger was back there after all. But, you know, Adrian Peterson ran well on them. Chris Thompson, dual threat, did well on them. Jordan Howard, also all double-digit days in PPR against them. Safe to say they're going to continue to struggle for quite some time. And when we were talking about the offense earlier, that's not helping matters at all. When you can't sustain any drives and your defense continues to get thrown back out on the field and you're worn out, you're going to get run over. And as I said, I don't think that offense is going to get any better anytime soon. So Arizona is going to be one of these teams that a lot of offenses can whip up on in the coming weeks.
I agree, especially if I have a DFS matchup or I'm looking for a waiver wire play in the next couple of weeks. I'm trying to find somebody just to fill a spot. If you need a body, let's face it, that happens to us all the time, right? You need a body at some point. So in that environment, I'm playing just about any running back with a pulse against Arizona, especially if they can catch the football. Another defense that has been beaten up all over the place, especially going back to week one, but the Saints, they were torched this time, wide receivers here. You know, Calvin Ridley comes off the 3-touchdown game, but like I said, week one, Tampa shredded them all over the field. 3 different receivers scored a touchdown. You got 3 games. Are they this bad?
I think I told you last week Ridley was going to score in his second consecutive game. Maybe, just a little bit.
I think we erased that.
Yeah, I'm sure you did. This is Saints of old. Get out the brown paper bags, cover your face, and play everybody you can against them. The secondary is horrible. The defense as a whole stinks. They've given up close to 40 more PPR fantasy points than the next closest defense to the wide receiver position. Wow. Enjoy it. But on the flip side, it's going to make Breeze and company have to score a lot of points too to stay in these games. So I'm all for that.
All right. In any situation, you have a reasonable receiver play against the Saints, that guy should be in your lineup. The Chargers. They held Buffalo wide receivers mostly in check. They gave up 1 touchdown, but they were destroyed by the Rams. They were destroyed by Tyreek Hill. Is this a product of no Joey Bosa, who now looks like he's out into November? Or are we just talking 2 great offenses, and that's kind of what you expect against any defense when you're talking about the KC and the LA Rams offense?
Don't know that I'd ever use Buffalo wide receivers as any part of a argument. My 4-year-old twins could probably shut down those wide receivers. Seriously though, Chargers are going to continue to get ripped up by quality passing games. Their D is not that good. Even with Bosa when he's healthy, the defense is not going to be that great. I don't know why everybody was all over the Chargers this year as a team that could really be an AFC championship type squad. Makes no sense to me. This team is regularly decimated on injuries or by injuries on both sides of the football. Chargers just don't have any heart. Nobody's there cheering them on. Look at it. It's always all of the opponents in the stadium. This team is going nowhere fast, and they're going to be on the wrong side of a lot more shootouts this year.
I don't disagree with most of that.
I think you had the Chargers going deep into the playoffs.
I stand by it. I think the Chargers can make a run. I'm no question about that. They have so much talent and veteran quarterback, a good running game. I have no question about it. The emergence of Mike Williams, a wide receiver, helps a great deal. They played well on defense last year, already dealing with an injury, so I'm not terribly worried about that. I think this is a product of the matchups. I really do. I think it's a product of the matchups.
And no heart.
If you see average matchups coming forward, I think the Chargers can slow those guys down at wide receiver. I'm not ready to say that this is a terrible secondary just yet.
If you've got wide receivers like the Bills, the Chargers will slow you down.
Fair. I'd love to see more. I want to see more and go from there. But I'm not ready to put them in the category of being total pushover against the position just yet. So, Chicago, though, on the other end of this, are they really this good? They rank number one in PPR against running backs, or is that a product of their matchups against Seattle, no running game to speak of, Green Bay, no running game to speak of, Arizona, David Johnson, but as we've discussed a couple of times now, that offense just hasn't been right the last few weeks, and he did catch a passing touchdown last week.
It's a lot more related to the opposition. Chicago's really damn good on defense. Don't get me wrong, especially with Khalil Mack there. The defense will only continue to get better, seeing that he came in so late into the equation. But when you look at the matchups, you've got upcoming games against the Bucks, the Bears, the Patriots in the next 3 weeks. They're going to continue to rank number one in the league just because their opponents don't really do a good job running the football. So I'd still start a quality running back against them when that time comes, even when the defense continues to get better. But the world-beating type numbers you're seeing right now are largely due to competition and not talent.
It may be because I haven't slept much in the last couple of days. I think you did say that they play the Bears in 2 weeks, and they are the Bears. But I apologize if I misheard you.
No, actually, I did think I said that.
I didn't sleep a whole lot the last couple of days.
I did think I said that. I haven't slept much either. Those twins I mentioned are sick a lot. Anyway, yeah, they're going to shut their own running game down.
Hey, it happens. I've seen that happen before in the NFL a few times. Okay, matchup plays. You know, we try to get a few matchup plays in every week that we like to talk about. So guys that are interesting. Ryan Fitzpatrick, assuming he starts, versus Chicago. Where are you?
I'm going to start if you need a quarterback. Low end, like 12-team, 14-team league, low-end quarterback right in that range, just because he has to sling it so much.
I agree, and I think they can do a little bit to slow down that pass rush with some chipping, and they don't run the football anyway, so might as well keep the running back in, let him block, and they don't even throw the running back position much. Ryan Tannehill versus the Patriots.
If you're desperate, again, in larger leagues, New England's defense is just decimated with injuries right now. It does not look good. And I think Tannehill can try and go for a sneaky 250 and two touchdowns against them. Going over the top doesn't look like it's going to be a problem right now.
Yeah, I used to be like the leader of the Ryan Tannehill bandwagon, if you recall.
You still have a poster on your wall, I heard.
Do I? I'm kind of surprised at how well he has played this year, but again, small sample size, not necessarily the best opponents to use as a barometer. But the Patriots aren't that impressive on defense, and that's me being extremely kind. I'm starting him, especially if it's a two quarterback or super flex league. He's a low end QB1 this week to me. If it was in Miami, I'd be way more excited to play him. All right, Antonio Callaway, we touched on earlier. Now Baker Mayfield starting, playing against the Raiders. What do you want there?
I'd flex play him this week. I think there's enough juice there, even in non-PPR.
I think
you can find the end zone.
I think so, and you got to the point there too. I was going to ask, does the scoring system matter? And to me, with somebody like him, it does. It's an interesting situation there, but I think he's actually a little more value non-PPR. Cameron Meredith scored last week, came back, you know, from obscurity. Everybody's getting a little worried. What did we tell you on last week's podcast? Hang on to him. He will return. He was just slow to learn the offense because he wasn't there physically on the field enough to get a grasp of such a nuanced system. Came in last week, did all right for himself, and very, very limited work, of course. Would you give him a shot against the Giants?
Trade him. Nah, sit him this week.
Yeah, I really have a hard time getting behind him, especially. It's not even anything to do with the matchup. It's that offense is very difficult to predict which players will get the ball and what kind of volume when their name isn't Kamara and their name isn't Michael Thomas. One other rookie here that I've been intrigued by, we talked about, we said last week, give him a little bit of time. Royce Freeman plays against Kansas City. My concern here, Kansas City could get up big offensively, knock the running game out of contention for Denver. They may have to sling the ball to keep up. Where are you at?
This one I keep going back and forth on. I would play him because I think the best way right now for Denver to keep up with Kansas City is to slow Kansas City by doing long extended drives and wearing them out. If you can keep Mahomes and company off the field a little bit longer, they'll throw a touchdown or two less.
It makes a lot of sense. It's just the question to me becomes, can Freeman sustain those drives? Can they keep it rolling? Can they gain enough every play to put them in reasonable third down situations or even perhaps rip off some nice runs that move the chains at a decent enough clip to keep the defense on its heels, keep Mahomes on the sideline? And obviously, that is a strategy that wins football games. Detroit did that effectively last week. They kept Tom Brady off the field, and it worked in their favor. We also touch every week on some players that maybe we didn't go over that you've had on your mind. Is there anyone this week you'd like to talk about?
Oh, boy. Go back to that New Orleans Saints defense. Really like Eli Manning and Sterling Shepard tag team attack this week. I think those two are going to hook up at least for one touchdown. I'm going to go back to the Sony Michel bandwagon reluctantly. Yes, I'm on the Sony Michel bandwagon against Miami with Rex Burkhead on injured reserve. And I know Tom Brady is out there advocating for more James White, but I think this is a game now with Michel having a little bit more action under his belt and a few more touches each week that this could be the game he finally goes for close to 100 total yards and a touchdown. And I like Cortland Sutton, rookie wide receiver for the Denver Broncos, to find his first touchdown against the Kansas City Chiefs secondary this weekend.
Yeah, sticking with that Denver-KC matchup, Chris Connolly's an interesting guy to me. They'll put a lot of attention on slowing Tyreek Hill and keeping Travis Kelce at bay. Connolly could have a decent enough game in the short area passing. I think there's a reasonable chance he gets into the end zone. Kenny Stills in Miami against the Patriots. Somebody's got to get the ball in their hands. Not really convinced that's Danny Amendola. Not really convinced that's Devontae Parker. I'm thinking more or less Stills is probably the only guy that passing game are playing. Willie Snead versus the Steelers is an interesting guy to me. They'll probably focus a lot of attention on keeping that running game in check. The Steelers have obviously struggled at keeping anybody's passing game under wraps so far this year. Snead's somebody who has an easy flex play, maybe wide receiver 3 in any scoring system value for this week to me. And then against Houston, Jordan Wilkins, kind of a similar mentality that you just had. Keep the offense off the field. Keep Deshaun Watson on the sidelines and pound the football. Don't know that the Colts are built to do that. They're probably not, but they're going to at least have an opportunity to show us that they can. And Wilkins is probably a low-end flex play.
Piling on that one, I think having watched Andrew Luck after the first couple weeks, they really need to add more balance to that system for fear of him just continually, one, taking a pounding, and two, I'm not sure that shoulder and neck area are still completely right.
Well, I think that's pretty clear. And the decision to put Jacoby Brissett in to throw the Hail Mary pass at the end of, it was roughly, a 60-yard air pass? And he threw it 70 or so. I'm convinced that if this were any other version of Andrew Luck, he would have been the guy throwing that football. I mean, that's not a crazy pass for an NFL quarterback. With that in mind, yeah, I think there is reason to be concerned, and they may have to rein him in a little bit and change up how they're playing or allowing him to play. So here we are. We're entering week 4. We have a chance now to see even more trends develop, get a little better feel for things. I'm pretty excited about how it goes. I wasn't actually even that crazy about the games last week. Week 2 was wonderful. I thought week 3 took a step back from the excitement. Where were you on the feeling of week 3, and where are you at on week 4?
Deflated in week 3. Week 4, I'm ecstatic. I'm going to take that 0-3 team and finally win this week.
There you go. Make it a championship team. All right, Ryan, what's going on over at the Huddle?
Come join us for all the award-winning information you need to win your fantasy football league. Our customized fantasy football rankings give you the scoring you need for your league-specific scoring system. Get all the waiver wire pickups, sleepers, and all of the strategy pieces you need to dominate your competition. If you use the podcast 18 code, you can get $10 off our already discounted price for the rest of the season at thehuddle.com.
It's a great deal. Everybody should be taking advantage of it while they can. They can still get a chance to sign up. I'm Corey Benigni. He's Ryan Benigni. We'll talk to you next week.